been murdered. Other friends have flown before. On the morrow he will leave me, as my hopes have flown before. And the bird said nevermore.
You're listening to The Call Podcast with Brandon and Josh.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome, Ravens Nation worldwide. Welcome to The Call. This is a Baltimore Ravens podcast where we talk anything and everything Baltimore Ravens football. Thank you for listening to us on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, the Baltimore Sports Report Network, Player.fm, and Overcast. Joining me as always, he's staying out west. He's in San Jose with the Ravens. No, I'm kidding. Josh, what's going on, man?
Man, I wish I was out in San Jose with the team. That'd be great. But no, I'm right here in Baltimore, Maryland. I'm good, man. I'm good. I'm good.
Yeah, so before we even get into the game, of course, the biggest thing coming out of this game, Terrell Suggs has a torn Achilles, will be out for the rest of the season. Josh, you and I, we're going to talk about this for a little bit, but man, let's just open it up here, man. How is this going to affect the team here? This is a huge loss.
It is. It's a huge loss, only because I don't say that because it magnifies everybody's play, because now you got to switch people around. Dermaville's got to move over the spot to fill, as Harbaugh said. It magnifies because now teams can't have to scheme against them. You know how it was when Ed Reed was back there. Everybody had to scheme against him. If Ray Lewis was in the middle, you have to scheme. Our opponent's game plans are going to change because Suggs is out. So this is a huge loss, and especially after the way we were getting after the quarterback on Sunday, which I was highly impressed with. And I think that was the difference late in the game, especially in fourth quarter, because – and I'd have to go back, but I can't remember exactly where he got injured. So I really have to go back and really see where – he actually did get hurt. I really can't recall what quarter, what play it was, to be honest with you. But the gaping hole can't replace Terrell Suggs. He's going to be sorely missed there.
Yeah, absolutely. And not only missed on the field during the game, big time going to miss that guy in the locker room, on the sidelines. Of course, once he does get surgery and everything like that, I'm sure he will be at the games, kind of giving some pointers up to the younger guys and everything. But to lose such a leader in the locker room, on the field, on the sidelines, that is going to affect the team maybe even more than his play, because, I mean, Terrell Suggs is an older guy. His play isn't the way it was a few years ago. Still one of the best players in the league, don't get me wrong. But his impact on this team was on the field as well as off, and I think that leadership is what is really going to hurt the Ravens now.
Well, did you hear, speaking of leadership, do you know he's staying out there with the team out west?
Is he really?
Yeah, he's not going back to home in Baltimore. Yeah, he's actually with the team this weekend. So that shows you a leader there. That shows you, instead of going home and getting nursed up, I mean, I wouldn't say I'm against this, because it's obviously we want to recover, but if this injury is going to be out the rest of the year, it's kind of like he's there for support. He's there to support his team, and that to me speaks volumes. That to me shows Suggs a true character and a team player and a true leader of this squad. And hats off to him. I mean, I don't know if he's getting treatment out there or if he's in a say requiring surgery, but again, this is huge for the Ravens' morale. Especially after that so close of a win, we should have won that game. So now I think it's just a boost, and I think it's just for the support, couldn't speak any louder.
All right, so let's talk about something that I don't think a lot of people want to talk about. People don't want to bring this up, but I feel as if we have to. It is our rule, since we're the podcasters here and people listen to us worldwide, of we have to talk about this. With Terrell Suggs' injury, it's his second Achilles injury. It's on the other leg than it was a couple years ago. With his age, with the amount of years he has left on his contract, could this have been the last season that we see Terrell Suggs?
No, and I say that because knowing Suggs, he's not going to go on top. Did it happen to Ray? Probably not. Is Terrell Suggs Ray Lewis? No. Will Terrell Suggs come back? I don't know. I've seen stranger things happen. And I have to look at this, but the last time that Suggs has actually got hurt was that that 2012 season, and you know what happened there. So, and he came back from that injury. So he's coming back from this injury before, but I really don't know with this instance if this is the last time we've seen him this year. Is this the last time we've seen him in general? No. He's not going to go on top. I think he'll come back for one more year, regardless if we go and win it all, regardless if we get out in the playoffs or if we don't make the playoffs. I think Suggs will be back for at least one more year, and maybe next year will be his final year to see 55. But no, I don't think he's done.
All right, well, that's good to hear. But let me just – I'll take some of the blame on this injury. I have to put it out there because I feel as if I have a jersey jinx on me. It appears as if every time I get a player's jersey, they either leave, retire, or get hurt. Because
what did you do?
Well, let's go through the list, all right? My first official Ravens jersey, Matt Stover. The season I got that, he immediately went to Indianapolis. First Nike jersey I got, Lardarius Webb, 2012, immediately gets hurt and is out for the rest of the season. Since he got out, I said, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to get a Ray Lewis jersey. He'll be around forever. He immediately retired. Now I got a Terrell Suggs jersey and the Gladiator helmet, both for my birthday this past July, and I don't even get to wear them once because I wore my white Flacco jersey since they were away. I didn't wear my new black Suggs jersey for this game, so I don't even get to wear that jersey, you know, technically with him playing now, because I just have a jinx on me where I can't wear jerseys because when I do, people get hurt.
That is an interesting take. So, well, how about this? Maybe for the rest of the season, why don't you wear our opponent's main player jersey and maybe they'll exit the game.
Oh, you know, that's a good idea. I could get a Brady jersey, and for my my Caps fans out there, I could get a Sidney Crosby jersey as well.
Speaking of Brady jersey, did you see the anybody see the preview of South Park making fun of Brady?
I have not seen that.
Classic stuff. It's on my Facebook, but it's. I'll preview it. I won't do it justice, obviously, but it's like a 15-second, and I think it's this week, obviously. I think the episode's this week, I hope, because I can't wait to see it, but it was a 15-20-second clip, and Cartman saying it was like he was in school, and I think he was just facing like detention or being suspended from school, and he's like, and he said, I would not be suspended for 4 weeks. I'll be suspended for one. Heck, no, maybe zero. Like, they were making fun of it. So I can't wait to see what South Park comes out with that. But, I don't think Suggs is done. And your jersey jinx, that's a little weird. So it's just too coincidental.
I know, right? I know.
I almost had Suggs. I changed my uniform this year, and I'm sticking with, obviously, Ray. But I did have Suggs on in the morning, and I'm like, nah. And it's actually, I'm looking at my Suggs jersey now. So it's kind of like weird how I almost wore it, and then I was like, nah, I'm going to go with Ray again.
Yeah, so, I mean, terrible news about Terrell Suggs. I mean, terrible. He'll always be a Raven, and hopefully, like you said, maybe he will be on the sidelines for a little bit. I think that'd be great for the team, but you got to take care of yourself, and we're definitely going to miss him on this team. And we'll talk about it on the Purple Friday show of who we think might be taking his place, what we think will go around for the next game. But since this is our first review episode, let's get into the Red Eye review with this game. Ravens-Broncos, week one. First off, Josh, let me know what you thought about this game as a whole, because me watching it, I was shocked that the score was so low at the half. I could not believe that neither offense really got anything going. And that's a good thing and a bad thing, because number one, our defense was doing their job. But number two, the offense really got shut down on our side of the ball as well as theirs. But what was your idea for this game? What did you think of it?
Well, what I thought is I couldn't believe that we were still in the game. It's kind of like, I wouldn't say I couldn't believe it, like I didn't expect it. I mean, obviously I predicted a loss. I predicted a 24-20 loss, and the score was kind of close. They scored 19 points. And it was kind of like the way the game was going. I was like, it's going to take one. It's either game. Either side of the teams are going to be like, that, hey, someone's going to make a play, and it's going to determine the game. I thought it was for us when Jimmy Smith took it to the house on the tip throw pick six. I thought the game was over. I was like, that's it. All you got to do is score a touchdown. They can't score. It's over. When Flacco, for whatever reason, read that route wrong, or E. Smith ran the wrong route, I don't know what happened, but when he threw that pick six, I immediately was like, we're going to lose. And then I hate to be negative like that, like, oh, my God, here it is. But the way the game was going, I felt that, and I was right, obviously, he's being scored, but I felt that we couldn't move the ball enough to score a touchdown. And even if we kicked a field goal or two, it wasn't going to matter, because – I felt that the Broncos could have gotten a field goal range with their kicker kicking. He got a kick from 70 yards, and I think Tucker could have done the same.
Mm-hmm.
But it just, those two first quarter field goals really hurt us, because there's a difference in the game, 13-19. And it kind of reminded me of, remember Peyton in the playoff game in 2006? Same thing. We kept Peyton Manning out of the end zone in a playoff game at home, and we lose. It was kind of like the same way, because we couldn't move the ball, and then we had an ill-timed turnover in that game. Same thing with here, except that led to a touchdown. This game was unique, Brandon, because both defenses were just hitting, and each team had a pick six. Peyton Manning threw zero touchdowns. Joe Flacco threw zero touchdowns. Each threw a pick six to each other's defense. The difference was two first quarter field goals with Brian McManus of the Broncos kicking those. So it's kind of like, and there's a lot of small victories here. You know, the game as a whole, I was impressed with. Not impressed with the offense, but impressed with the defense. Obviously, the defense is sick nasty. I couldn't agree more with anybody agreeing with that, because Brandon, if you look, the secondary held its own.
Mm-hmm.
The pass rush was there. I've never seen Peyton Manning get rushed like that by us. I don't know if we just overmatched the line, but Kyle Arrington it was a corner blitz, and I just saw 24 coming on the corner, and Manning just basically lay down. They were laying the wood. They were hitting. Both offenses couldn't really get going, and even Gary Kubiak said that was one of the greatest defensive games he's ever been a part of or seen. Great old-fashioned football. I enjoyed it. It kept me entertained. And then even breaking down, I mean, so much to break down, but even the fourth quarter drive, when we got the ball, it's kind of like I knew, like, we can do it. Joe's been here before. And when we converted that fourth down to Crockett Gilmore,
mm-hmm.
I was like, we're going to win this game. Like, as soon as that fourth quarter converted, I was like, this game's ours. And I kept saying, don't leave them too much time on the clock, because the Broncos have two timeouts, and then they had to use one on the injury. So it was kind of like, okay, I feel good now, because all they had to do was basically get in field goal range. They could have kicked a 60-70-yard field goal and probably win the game, because we're only down six. So even if you kick your point goal up one, they can kick a field goal and win. So you don't want to leave Manning too much time. I felt confident with their defense, but really I want to hone in on the offense. It's just – we need playmakers, and that's an understatement. And it all starts with the line. If you remember the keys of the game, didn't I mention it was going to start and end with the trenches?
Mm-hmm.
That's the biggest key, because obviously you see there, how many more plays could we have had if Joe Flacco had more time? I don't think anybody in their right mind would have had more time. I don't care who the quarterback is, obviously Manning didn't, but I don't care if you put the best quarterback in the league right now in there. Not going to get too much time, and it just – it really sucks, because I really have high hopes for this line. We need Kelechi back. I don't know what was up, but they were just –
well, Kelechi – not blocking. Kelechi was – he was playing, right? But I don't know if he was – if he was
100%.
Yeah, it was 100%, because he didn't play a lot of the preseason games.
I don't know what's going on with that. I don't know if he's still hurt or if he's not 100%. I don't know. I had confidence in the line.
Yeah, here's two things that I do want to bring up about the offense, because a lot of people were getting onto Joe, and you know, it's hilarious, like, seeing stuff on Twitter and Facebook, how everyone talks about how great of a quarterback he is, but the second he does poorly, they just say how terrible he is. It's the way it's always been with fans with Joe, but...
That's fair with the fans for you. They're not true fans.
Yeah,
they just
exactly.
Don't know any better. And to your point, and I'll let you finish your points, I really want to hear it, but it's like my friend tweeted, it's Peyton Manning, zero touchdowns, one pick six. Joe Flacco, zero touchdowns, one pick six thrown. But Peyton Manning's the best quarterback in the world, and Joe Flacco's the worst quarterback in the world. For me, it's don't get me started, because I'll go on a 20-minute rant. Really, but as you know me, I hate people. You might as well be exiled to Pittsburgh or New England and join those bunch of idiots, because it just drives me up the wall.
Yeah.
It's, you know, I hate that, and I really want to hear your point.
Yeah, so here's the two things I just want to bring up about the offense. Joe, he definitely did not have the greatest day. That's understandable. He didn't have, like you said, he did have time in the pocket. Stuff wasn't happening. He doesn't have a lot of stuff that he can – he doesn't have a lot of people he can count on, I guess, to throw to. Justin Forsett wasn't doing well, and I think the two reasons were Eugene Monroe was taken out early off.
Concussion, yep. As soon as I saw that, that was big.
Yeah, losing him, huge, absolutely huge, because because then you have to readjust, and he's a big playmaker for you. And plus, the offensive coordinator, the new guy, Gary Kubiak, being the guy from Denver, being our former offensive coordinator, being the head coach in Denver now, I'm sure he knows how Joe Flacco works. And with Mark Trestman trying to adapt his way into what they learned last year, the offense was at a disadvantage due to the fact that they had somebody they worked with just a year ago as the head coach. That head coach knew how to defend against Joe Flacco because they were almost running the Gary Kubiak system against him. So what is your thoughts on that? Do you feel as if having a guy that used to work with you, I mean, he can kind of take some of those plays with him and know what to do? I don't want to put the blame on just Joe or Forsett or Steve Smith, but on the offense as a whole and the offensive coordinator, because obviously he was using plays that the defense, that the other team already knew.
I'm not going to go there. yeah, and you hear me. I don't do that hocus pocus speculation. Oh, the old head coach knew what we were doing. No, because how many former head coaches have we faced? Rex Ryan's yet to beat us. Jim Harbaugh couldn't beat us, and he used to be our ex-quarterback. Yeah, he went on our staff as a quarterback in 1998. But being that, with that said, how many ex-players have we played against? How many? We played against Rex Ryan. Didn't we play against Ed Reed? And didn't I recall in the Jets game, Jacoby Jones? I don't know how that happened, but Jacoby Jones is one bright spots as a receiver. Beat the late Ed Reed, the great Raven, and on a big play in that Jets game, that winning game back then. So it's happened. I mean, just because they're on the other team, that is a good theory. I think did it play some part into it? Probably, because he probably said, hey, this is Joe's tendencies. You know, it ain't no different than, let's say, because I'm a poker player, and they were saying playing poker, and I got coached up to play against a guy, and the mentor said, this is his tendencies. He does this because it's like, you know, you read people. So Kubiak probably said some of those signals, but I'm not reading into, oh, he knew the playbook and they knew it running, because Trestman's running a different system than Kubiak. And it's the NFL, and I don't think they're too smart for their own good to know that, hey, we're going to run the same stuff against them. But in the same respects, it's not like they stopped us and Manning threw four touchdowns, torched us. You know, don't get me wrong there, Brandon. Both offenses were stopped. Mm-hmm. So, because we could say the same thing. Well, because Kubiak used to be on here, we knew what they were running, or we know what he was running. So, I mean, you could probably say the same thing on both sides of the ball. But defensively, both teams played great. This one hurts because, yes, I expected to lose. I hate to say it, but yeah, I expected to lose. So, but it hurts because this is a game we could have easily won. It wasn't like we lost by two touchdowns like we did the 1 year and got creamed 31-17.
Right.
And it was worse than that, because we actually got a garbage time touchdown to even make it a 14-point game. We were getting creamed at that game. And granted, we won a Super Bowl. Granted, the Super Bowl year, we lost three straight games and won the championship again. It happens. This isn't going to hurt in the long run. Again, Pittsburgh lost an AFC game to New England. We lost an AFC game to the Broncos. The Broncos play a short week on the road against a great stout, another stout defense in the Chiefs on Thursday night, which I'm going to pick the Chiefs easily at 2-0 on that one. So, and the Broncos could easily be at 0-2 after that game. So the Ravens could be 1-0. But the greatest thing about it is we kept a Peyton Manning led offense to zero touchdowns in the opening game of the season. If this sets the tune defensively for this season, I'm telling you what, look out, because if our offense actually finds the offense, we're going to win some football games this year. And the secondary, much huge improvement. Jimmy Smith is probably the best corner in the league right now. Let's see, you got Arrington was proved well. And people, they're going to step up in Suggs' absence. Carl Davis had a great game. You're going to see him stepped up. I heard Brandon Williams had a monster game. He's a beast.
Haven't heard back from Carl Davis about being on the call either.
Yeah, I haven't heard anything either. And he wanted to interact with the fans, too. I need to get on about that.
I know.
Like you said, what better way to be on the call with us?
Exactly.
Interaction out from San Jose. Come on, man. hopefully, we'll forgive him this time. Hopefully next time we'll accept the invitation. We'd be more than welcome to have Carl Davis on the call. It'd be great. That'd be great. But with that being said, I think that this one just hurts because we had it, and I'm not going, and again, I'm at the end of the game, I am not going to be the one, and there's plenty of fans out there, and I'm not saying they're wrong or right. Everybody's entitled to their opinion. I'm not, you know, apart from the Flacco haters, that's different. But I'm not putting the onus on, well, Steve Smith should have caught the ball. You know what my first reaction was? Well, Lee Evans should have caught the Super Bowl, and we should have been in the Super Bowl. Same thing. It's, I don't think Steve Smith would have came down anyway because the ball hit him in the helmet. Mm-hmm. He's 5'8"? I'm 5'5". It means he had to jump half his height to basically get that ball. Flacco put it there where no one can get it. But Steve Smith hit him in the face mask. So pretty much, like, basically, if he put his hands up, he would. I mean, he had to jump for it. He's not an Anquan Boldin. He's not a Todd Heap. He's not a Dennis Pitta. He's not a Cracky Gilmore. He's Steve Smith. So, and then if he came down, I think he would have one foot in, if not at all. And the Cracky Gilmore thing, I actually looked into this because it literally, and I saw the screenshots and I sent those out. Legitimately, you could have called pass interference. Everybody said there's got to be PI there, PI there. It, I actually looked up the rule. Apparently, face guarding in the NFL is not illegal anymore. But what you can't do is you can't impede the receiver to come back for the ball. So in that replay, I really have to watch it again to see if Crockett Gilmore had to come back for the ball. But Flacco put it right there. It hit Crockett in the hand. So it's not like, you know, the ball hit. Now, if the ball hit the defender's back right between the numbers, then you could probably call pass interference because Crockett couldn't even catch the ball because the guy's right in his wheelhouse and he didn't turn around to play the ball. I think if it's right there, you have to turn around to play the ball. But when it actually hits the receiver in his hands, mm-hmm. he didn't impede his progress, and it just was a lucky tip drill, and it got caught apparently. So it didn't fall incomplete. Joe Flacco, I don't fault him for it. It was an incredible throw. But how many times did I see on Sunday that Joe Flacco was throwing off his back foot? He did it to the Steve Smith throw to try to get the game-winning touchdown. You can't have Joe running. I mean, and again, how many more plays could we have had on offense if he wasn't running around? How many times he was dropped back, he was dressed immediately. Right. I've never seen that. And the dude's a tough cookie, man. Remember that horse collar that he took?
Oh, yeah.
Didn't even faze him. Mm-hmm. Didn't faze him. Everybody's crying about that. I think there should have been a flag because he was out of the tackle box. If you're in the tackle box, not a flag for a horse collar. You got to bring. And it happened. I saw the Steelers game. They were saying that the Patriots brought Ben Roethlisberger down by the same move, but he was inside the tackle box, so it's not a horse collar because he's not freely running with the football, running away. It's a sack. You're trying to bring him down. So, I mean, which is me, it really does make sense because you can't go after their knees, you can't get after their head, but you can yank them down by the shoulder pads in the pocket. Doesn't make sense. But I don't write the rules in the NFL. Why? I just do what I do. But, again, this game hurts, but, guys, we're not down and out. I mean, we lost to the Bengals at home last year, and we won 3 straight. We were 3-1 before we knew it. I mean, good news is, or the great news, I should say, is we have the Oakland Raiders on Sunday. The Oakland Raiders looked dismal against the Bengals. Dismal. It was 33-0, and they only got 13 points because they scored 2 garbage time touchdowns because obviously the Bengals gave up on defense, and we're like, here, you can have a few points. And they might be without their starting quarterback and Derek Carr, so we play the Oakland Raiders. No disrespect to the organization. They have some talent around there. Latavius Murray is a great running back. They got a rookie, Mari Cooper. They got Khalil Mack, a great linebacker. They just signed Alden Smith. They got some great all-pro players over there. But great news is the Oakland Raiders. What sucks about the Broncos game is this one, we got away. But if we had offense, we'd have scored. But, hey, 0 offensive touchdowns all day. Pressure on Manning all day, which was phenomenal because we never get to Peyton Manning. And I've seen Peyton Manning. I don't think he'll last this week. And for all fantasy owners out there, I know I had him in a few leagues. I had C.J. Anderson. He was shut down. Speaking of that, Brandon, no one's running on us this year. No one.
Yeah.
I don't think no one's running on us this year. But and I think at the end of the game, what really, really irritated me is – well, one of two things is Ronnie Hillman was running, and it was a different look. Mm-hmm. So it was hard to stop him. But two, Peyton Manning gets the ball on their own 4-yard line with, like, what, 13 minutes left in the fourth quarter? He just started it, and they took the whole fourth quarter. It was like 11 minutes. Let him go all the way down the field. That irritated me. And that was the difference in the game. You get one stop there in their own territory, or even they get a couple first downs. You stop them on the 20 or 30-yard line, get the ball back. We probably would have won the game. But it's just you can't give Peyton Manning and didn't I say that in the keys as well? Keep Peyton Manning on the sideline. Well, we didn't do that in the fourth quarter. He dominated that quarter, took the ball, like basically 11 out or 12 out of 15 minutes. We had the ball for maybe 2-3 minutes of that time and the whole last minute technically. So with that being said, that can't happen. You got to play to stop. And I think with the Suggs injury, it had to be around that time because we couldn't do no pressure. But I don't know if it was enlarged with pressure in the secondary, but they got to stop this zone. Against Manning, I think what he should have done is a lot of man-on-man coverages because they were sitting down in the zone and getting these first downs. And how long did I see 3rd and 5, 3rd and 4, 3rd and 15 converted? It's just ridiculous. It has to stop. Really, from fixing it, we need to score some points. We need a playmaker. We need Perryman to stretch the field. We need somebody. Yeah. I hope he comes back soon.
Yeah,
defense just has to keep it going.
Yeah,
keep it up.
Absolutely, yeah. I want to stay on the offensive side of the ball for just another minute. You know, before all this happened, we were all sharing that video of Steve Smith talking about how, you know, guys like Kamar Aiken and all these younger guys are making a name for themselves on the practice field. But with this offense really not showing up this week, Steve Smith, Crockett Gilmore were the only two that really do anything. Marlon Brown had one catch that was very nice. He kind of stretched the field on that one. But where was Kamar Aiken? I don't remember ever seeing his name. I don't think he did anything.
One catch.
There you go. One catch. Marlon Brown had one catch.
Negative 2 yards.
Yeah. Does Joe just not trust these guys? Were they not open? Were they not doing their job? Why was it that Steve Smith and Crockett Gilmore were the only two guys to make any kind of noise in this game?
You bring that up because this segues right into my next point. Why weren't they? Brandon starts with the line. How can you throw these guys? You can't block for Joe. He was under arrest all day, so there's the numbers right there.
Yeah.
But it wasn't even Crockett Gilmore, Steve Smith. They each caught two passes. Let me ask you this. I don't know if you've seen the box score. Who do you think the leading receivers on Sunday were?
Jeez, I have no idea.
It's going to shock you, and you'll never forget. And this is a trivia question out there for all you Raiders fans to remember, because no one would ever get this. It was Justin Forsett and Kyle Juszczyk, each with 4.
Oh, my God.
Look at the box score. I'm not kidding you. When I saw that, I almost dropped my tablet. I was like, are you kidding me? That's the offensive line. Because Joe's under duress, and Juszczyk and Forsett are standing right there at the line. So Joe's like, I got to get rid of it. I'm taking a sack or incomplete pass. He's got to get rid of it, and everyone's there catching it.
Wow, you see that's poor.
That's poor. You can't have that.
No, not at all. That is a good point though, because I was not thinking about the offensive line, thinking when talking about wide receivers. But man, you do bring up a very good point with the offensive line not blocking for Joe, with Eugene Monroe getting hurt. That it is affecting the entire game. So,
of course,
yeah, absolutely. So very good point there, man. So
you can have all the talent in the world, man, but if you're not blocking for your quarterback, you're not blocking for your running back. You're not. That's how it is. It's on the defense side of football. If you give the quarterback all day to throw, Johnny Manziel himself could throw 5 touchdowns in a game if you don't rush him. Anybody can. So that's the whole problem. The offensive line needs improvement, and really we do need playmakers on this team. But there needs to be big improvement. The defense is fine. I can't wait to see how the Suggs injury does affect us, especially after the big opponent. I want to see how it affects us on Sunday, but I'm really not worried. I mean, how many times do we bounce back? And remember, not in the beginning of the year, but wasn't in the middle of the year that one year where we took a hard, hard, ugly loss in Jacksonville Monday Night Football on national TV?
Mm-hmm.
And we went 12-4 that year. That was one of our 4 losses, and we went to the divisional round, the playoffs. So I'm not worried. This team, I literally said this right after the game. How many ugly losses have I seen in 30 years? This doesn't faze me. It sucks because it hurts, but you bring up 2006 in the playoffs. We had a 2-touchdown lead in 2010 in Pittsburgh in the playoffs, 21-7.5, and lost that game. We had 2 14-point leads last year against the Patriots and lost that game with an interception. We had a Lee Evans drop and a Billy Cundiff miss. We've had Troy Polamalu jump over the line and make basically sack Flacco and fumble it. We've had Polamalu pick 6 against us in the 2008 AFC title game. I could keep going. I've seen ugly losses before, but you know what? I've seen some incredible great wins with this team and great resilience. And what the Ravens usually do, they don't have many losing streaks under Harbaugh. And this team, they're resilient. They'll come back with a winning streak. And we'll be 1-1 come Sunday night, and I ain't worried about it. Raiders, they pose a threat, but again, it's the Raiders, and again, that couldn't be in a perfect time after this loss. But again, I'm going to say it time and time again, Brandon, it hurts because We could have easily won this game. We should have, but I don't think we deserved it, basically, with the offense not scoring any points of production. If we'd have won, it would have been that, man, we got lucky. It reminds me of how Seth Rollins always gets away with the title every week. It's there, but it's just like he gets away with it. It's just it wouldn't have felt right, because it's kind of like we deserve to lose that game. And the kind of Broncos did too, because it's kind of the same thing. They didn't move the ball either. It was kind of like basically their kicker was their MVP. Because without his big, long field goals and them getting there, I mean, and a focal point of that, you have to give the team credit. The Broncos took over, I think, on like the 45-yard line, their own 45-yard line. They even moved the ball in like 10, 15 yards. They kicked like a 60-yard field goal. So the defense basically kept us in the game. It's just the offense let us down. And we've seen this tune before. How many times has the defense shut them out or shut them down to 2 or 3 field goals, and then we can't score? It just happens that way. So with that being said, could easily be 1-0, but we're 0-1. But we're not down and out. I mean, again, it's week one. This isn't week 12. We'll be fine. We just got to find our wits about us, find the line to block for us, and we'll be all right.
And you know what? This wasn't a dirty loss or anything. This wasn't a bad loss, really, because last time we went to Denver, you know, it was like it felt like it was 33-3 at the end of the game. You know, it was not a game like that. We were right there, neck and neck with the Broncos the entire time. And while the offense really didn't do a good job, the defense did a great job. I mean, Jimmy Smith showed up, and it was a good return for him back to the regular game. C.J. Mosley, doesn't look like he's going through a sophomore slump in any way, at least from that first game. He looked great. And, you know, Dumervil was back in Denver. That's where he came from, and he looked good. The defense really did – they picked up the slack when the offense really couldn't get anything done. So as long as you're making plays, that is a sign of a good football team. Doesn't matter what side of the ball is making the plays. Of course, the offense – it makes more noise because you see it on the scoreboard. But either way, this was a good game. This was a good showing for at least the defense of the Ravens, because they did hold Peyton Manning. They did hold the Broncos, like you said, to 0 touchdowns. I mean, this was not the game we envisioned, but as a week one game, it definitely showed our strength, and it showed us where we got to work on to make ourselves a better team.
And it has to be exciting for us to know that defense, if we play like that all 16 games, I mean, granted, we're going to give up touchdowns during the year points, but if they play like that sharp and the offense actually finds the offense, this is a scary team. And people are probably watching this game, opponents or fans, and they're like, that defense, don't want to play against them. And not only that, but it was kind of weird across the NFL. How many defenses, and I know in fantasy it happens, but how many defenses scored this weekend? There was a ton. I mean, the Seahawks scored twice. Broncos and Ravens defense scored. There was countless defenses that actually scored a lot of points this week, especially for fantasy owners. But given the fact that Terrell Suggs is down, how huge is did you even get a chance to see the Sunday night football game by chance?
Sunday night? No, I did not. I was watching Fear the Walking Dead.
Ah, that's right. That was one. Ah. Well, obviously, you know, big news. Dez Bryant's out. 12 weeks with a foot,
right?
Broken foot. So the Cowboys, but it's the same thing. But you look at the flip side. I don't know if you saw it. Giants basically gave away the game. They were like, "Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, here you go." Giants should have won that game. Cowboys should have lost, and the Cowboys are in the same position. Except they escaped with their win. We didn't. But they're without Dez Bryant for 8 to 12 weeks, basically the whole year. So there were some heavy playmakers that were lost this weekend. What I've noticed across the NFL as a whole, a lot of games I watched this weekend, everybody was hitting. I've seen hits after hits. Not really, and there wasn't really that many penalties on them. There was clean hits. I've seen Kaepernick get his bell rung last night in Monday Football. Josh McCown had a Elway-like helicopter spin at the goal line. There were some hits this weekend, and the Ravens were laying some wood. And another thing I want to touch on the Broncos again before is T.J. Ward, their safety, was out. So, again, it a little hurts more because they had one of their best safeties out and their best players out. So, you know, with injury, he comes back this week. But a short week, Thursday Night Football is Broncos and Chiefs. We already know what probably will happen with that. Ravens go to Oakland. And Pittsburgh plays San Francisco. San Francisco is coming off a great – home opener win on Monday Night Football. And I have to see who the Bengals and Browns. I haven't really focused on them, but the AFC North looks like this. Bengals are in first place. Browns, us, and the Steelers all at 0-1. That's how it's shaping up. But after this week, we have three straight divisional games. So really, I'm telling you, the season's going to shape up pretty quickly here by the end of September, going into October season. So, it's all right there. We just got to start with Oakland.
That's right. So we'll cover the Oakland game in our Purple Friday show. So, Josh, as far as Ravens-Broncos go, did we cover everything?
We covered it to the max, my friend.
All right, very cool. If you guys want to continue the conversation with Josh or I, you can tweet to us. My Twitter is at BrandoCash. Josh, where can people tweet to you at?
They can tweet to me always at ItalianGQ52.
All right, very cool. Go over to Facebook.com/TheCallPodcast. Like us over there. Whenever a new show comes out, you will be the first to know. You can also go to Facebook.com/BrandoCash. We do way more than just The Call Podcast here. So go over there. We'll release photos, videos, other podcasts we do as well. So check that out. You can go to BrandoCash.com, get all the information you're ever going to need about this podcast and everything that we do. Be social with the show, guys. You know, we appreciate everyone that wrote us an iTunes review this preseason. Hope you guys are enjoying the music. What we need you to do, though, is continue to spread the word about The Call. So we're anywhere you're social on the web, tell people, all right? Let them know that you are a Baltimore Ravens fan. You listen to The Call, and they should, too. So let people know on Facebook and Twitter and Tumblr and Pinterest and Instagram and Vine and Reddit, anywhere you're social on the web. That's what all you got to do.
Or Insta-chat, like Belichick says.
Insta-chat, there you go. Snapchat, that's another one. I'm not on there, but... You know.
No, I'm not either. Yeah. I'm not 14 years old.
Yeah. let people know, though, we are available on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, the Baltimore Sports Report Network, Player.fm, and Overcast. So, Josh, we did our first review show, man. Get us ready for Purple Friday. Take us out Purple. The way you always do.
That's right, Brandon. Purple Friday's on the horizon. Guys, don't fret. We're okay. We know we lost our leader in Suggs, but he's there for support. He's out there supporting the team. We'll be back. I mean, we did lose the general in our Super Bowl year. Countless times we've lost some players, and but again, it hurts. Suggs is the heart and soul of the defense, of the team right now. He's one of the leaders and one of the last remaining stalwarts and a Raven for life here. And we want to send him out in style with a ring in our third championship world title and his second ring. So, and I know he'll be rooting us hard on the sidelines. Guys, it's not over. We have a defense. We have a strong defense. We just need to find some playmakers. Hey, just like the Eagles did back in whatever in the yesteryears, holding open tryouts, we might have to resort that bound run a little more because we need some playmakers quick. Score some points. Justin Tucker can't do it all his own. Matt Stover did in our Super Bowl year. We have the defensive likings of that right now after week one. But guys, it's okay. Nobody panic. Week one. Is okay. We really, it's okay. I mean, I can't really say it enough. Just listen to the call, it'll be all right. Again, can't stress it enough. We'll be back, and with a Purple Friday preview, we're going to preview how we're going to get it done and be at 1-1 come Sunday.
This has been a production of Brando Cash Entertainment. Music by Brad Lepore and Daniel Kelly from the DBK Studio. For more information, go to BrandoCash.com.
The Call is a member of the Baltimore Sports Report Network. Find more podcasts like this at BaltimoreSportsReport.com.